It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast?
Fellini's 8½ was released 50 years ago today, so turn off this podcast and go watch it now. How you doing, Will?
That's terrible advice to give them, to turn off the podcast.
They can come back to it, but 8½.
Never turn off the podcast.
This is true. Breaking one of the walls. How you doing, Will?
No one ever says that. That's great. That's great.
They usually sit in silence, in the code of silence, until we look at them.
Well, why don't you ask me how I'm doing, then?
How you doing, Will?
Well, my work schedule, after years, is changing, and I think this is good.
I blame the Kardashian baby.
For 2½ years... I've toiled on Monday nights till 11 p.m., and now I'm not. So I'm moving to Friday mornings instead, so I can go to all those crazy Monday night parties that I've heard so much about and keep missing.
You've been missing out on some, Monday night's the night to do it.
Let me tell you what, this is really just going to de-evolve into an extra night for me to cry and masturbate.
In that order?
Usually it's simultaneously.
That's how you get a good crygasm going.
What's going on in the world of Will Sean Podcast?
Finally, we reached 209, so road to 214. Let's do it.
We're so close.
Yes. Once again, Andrea Marchant, voice of the podcast, has her... just want to do some plugs for some friends of the show. That's good news, or the good news, or...
It's that's good news.
That's good news. She has episode 2 up. Nick Wexler is finally on Twitter, people. So, follow him. Not like he needs us.
He doesn't
him.
Need us. He had one tweet, no photo, and he had 5,000 followers.
Yeah, well, now he's got a photo, and he's got verified. He's got a second tweet.
I know. I saw that second
tweet. So, Will and I are going to be trying something new. We're going to try a Vine video, so this may be a thing.
This may be a thing. It'll probably blow up in our faces.
So, we got that. And usual stuff, people. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, and that's all we're asking. And now watch our Vine videos.
That's not too much to ask.
Yep.
Who's the sponsor this week?
This week's episode is brought to you by Gunlavia, the quarterly celebration of outdoor urban gun culture. 4 times a year, several miles of vital Los Angeles boulevards are shut down to traffic and transformed into the world's largest open-air shooting range. Stock up on ammo, clean those barrels, round up the kids, and have yourself a day of good shooting.
This sounds like a blast.
It's a blast.
Literally.
Yeah, they got lots of moving targets. Just have at it, people. God love you.
I can't wait. Well, we got a big show today, so let's get right to it. On the show today, a legendary actor has died. You know who it is. I don't know why I'm being coy. Melissa McCarthy has been taking some heat. What? And don't you dare stop listening to the podcast before it's over. Otherwise, you may, too, be the enemy. But first, we are very excited to have him back. A returning champion to the podcast. You heard his voice before. Now hear it again, Alex Stein.
Thank you very much for having me back. I am really, really excited to be back here. You guys are just so wonderful and so magnanimous and everything that it hurts me to say I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh, no.
And it's actually not with you, but with the podcast.
Right off the bat.
Right off the bat, just jumping into it. And it's this. I listened to I won't say who the guest was because I don't want to embarrass him. Or her, but it was him. But I listened to the podcast a couple of weeks ago, as I do every week, and subscribe on iTunes and write reviews of it, please. And the guest, who was a very intelligent, well-spoken person, every single other word that he said was like. And so after about 2 minutes, I completely stopped listening to it because it all sounded like. And then because I am a little ADD, because I do live in Los Angeles, I counted the number of times he said like during the 1 hour podcast, and it was 18,134.
Wow.
For serious?
I would like to think that's some hyperbole in that number.
You know, that's what's called a simile. It's when you compare two things using like or as.
What is it called when you pause every 2 seconds and Pavlovianly say the word like?
It's called the inarticulate musings of the 21st century male.
Ah, okay.
Wow.
That's what that is.
And I can't wait till we're done with this so I can find out more about who this
is. It is a verbal tic that bothers me, and it is something that I feel is endemic to a certain age group. And it's something that I have tried very hard personally, I know, to remove as much as possible from my language. But it's very easy to backslide into it.
Oh, it sure is. And my having complained about that, I'm sure now everyone listening to the podcast is going to point out
so
all of
everyone,
my verbal tics.
Count the number of times that Alex Stein says like on today's show.
And or actually just send anything you don't like that you notice that he says or just send it our way and we'll forward it to him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, we got a few things here going on. First of all.
Yes.
Got some mugs of delicious liquid. What is this?
Okay, so I have brought, as promised, homebrewed mead. And as we all know from studying Zymergy magazine and reading the internet, mead is fermented honey wine.
It smells
this
like honey.
This is 15 years old. It's made with only honey and water and yeast and a little bit of lemon.
Smells so amazing.
if you can wait a year after you brew mead, it's fantastic.
Is that what you have to do? You have to give it that time?
Yeah. If you can wait 5 years, it's amazing. This is 15 years old.
I'm very excited. It smells like plum wine.
A little bit. I just want to say also that we get the word honeymoon from mead.
Really?
Because there is the legend that if men and women drink mead, then they will bear sons. So back in the day, people would get married and then they would spend a month, moon, doing nothing but drinking mead and having sex.
I wish I wasn't in a room with two men drinking this right now.
I think if there are any women listening who have access to a time machine, they should come back to
I know one
Tuesday
woman who
night.
Has access to a time machine.
Tara Price.
Yeah.
The infamous Tara Price. Time Machine the Musical.
Well, I've never had mead before. I'm about to try it for
is
the first time.
Is there something that we say? Chin chin, a prost, a skull?
Salute, Nazdarovia, skull, yeah. Cheers.
Hey.
All of these go. Things. And now the sound of people drinking.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I like honey. I like honey wine.
Oh, and it's got a really interesting long tail after you.
Yeah. It's very much a sipping beverage. It's not so much a...
It tastes like fermented plum wine in a way. It's as if you took a wine and a beer and you mashed them up. So it's a very fruity, flavorful beer.
Listeners, go out there and make yourself some mead.
Wait 15 years.
Wait 15 years. Get back to us. This is good. 15 years? How much of this do you have?
I think I have 6 or 7 bottles left. So.
Wow.
This is fantastic. Okay, so you drink the mead to conceive sons. What alcohol do you have to then drink to tolerate sons?
I think a lot more mead.
Or everything else.
This is also what the Vikings used to drink before they would go rape and pillage. But of course, we do not condone raping and pillaging.
We podcast. We drink and podcast.
But we do condone the History Channel's Vikings, which is a fun show.
Right.
The modern
terribly
day.
Historically inaccurate.
The modern day version of raping and pillaging, doing a podcast.
Well, you know, I think it's important that people listening at home should not drink and podcast, but what we have here are two trained professionals on a closed course, so I think it'll be okay.
Well, before this turns into the mead hour, you're actually here to promote a book you've written.
I am.
And the book is called, I love the title, the book is called No, Mr. Bond, I Expect Your Dreams to Die.
Exactly.
So I have the book. I've read the book. It's a collection of essays.
Oh, you printed yours up.
I did print mine up.
I read mine on my tablet.
Well, because you're a normal human being. I need to feel a book.
Ironically, I hate reading things on tablets usually. I read everything, you know, like the God intended on paper.
I do that as well. And clearly, because I printed out 200 pages here or whatever.
On the work printer.
But, yes, exactly.
That's why God invented work printers.
Exactly. So I got to ask you first about this book. Are all these essays that you like, you because you perform essays around town, I've seen you, gotten to perform
with
you.
We have to say, it's short essays. Some of them are stories, some of them are more musing. How would you categorize it?
It's really hard for me to categorize it. So the subtitle of the book is Analog Stories for a Digital World.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't really describe it either. It's personal essays, a couple of short stories, 3 or 4 poems, and
It's got a little something in there for everyone.
Yeah.
But are a lot of these things you've performed around town here in L.A.?
Almost all of them are things I've performed around town. There's one or two that I haven't. There's one in particular that I have taken with me and have intended to perform at three different shows and have decided at each one that I shouldn't because it's too mean.
Oh.
You're just too nice of a person.
Yeah, I have to say, having had a little bit of mead, I'm feeling much warmer now, and I regret having complained about the guy who said life.
Oh, no, it's totally
fine. No, he's an asshole.
Now, how much of this is autobiographical, and how much of this is versions of yourself?
Well, the quick and easy answer is it's all totally true.
Really?
The other quick and easy answer is none of it is true. So the truth is somewhere in between. I like to say that everything in there is at least emotionally true.
Okay.
I changed some of the names of people. Most of the specifics are in fact true. I did date four women in a row named Suzanne, and each one was crazier than the last.
Yeah.
And I was denied entry into Canada.
I really love that story. Canada phobia. Canada phobia.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it very... Well, first of all, I love the way it started, because it started with... the story starts with a girl. Now, arguably, all stories start with a girl, because all stories really do.
They do.
That's the only reason I ever write a story.
Is this why women can't be writers?
I'm
taking the thought to its logical conclusion.
I just want to point out officially that Sean said that.
The Sean who just said that also holds in the highest esteem and is one of his favorite books, Age of Innocence, written by Edith Wharton, a woman. So there you have it.
Well, now that you've somewhat properly defended yourself, I really like that, because that was a lot about, like, I know there's, like, you see the car and you're thinking back to these things and the girl wasn't quite like, it was a very relatable story, I think, to anyone who's ever, in theory, loved anyone or been interested in anyone or even just had fleeting feelings towards anyone that they thought were love.
I had a lot of, I didn't have a lot of relationships when I was in college, but I had a lot of the relationships I had were all very deep, and they were all characterized by heartbreak and longing.
I think that's the condition of any sort of sensitive male in his early 20s whose worldview is overinformed by a combination, like what you went through, basically a bad combination of pop culture and philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a toxic brew, because it fills your head with just too many... too many ideals, none of which can ever be attained or fulfilled, and you're trying to rationalize your way through these ideas with all the shit you're reading that you probably shouldn't be reading at that age, because mm-hmm. you don't have enough life experience to process philosophy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I couldn't have said it better myself. So.
I have a theory I haven't put into practice. I don't think anyone should be allowed to read pure philosophy unmediated till they're at least in their late 20s. I think you need to... you need to approach philosophy through art, music, and literature, through the expressions of those ideas, because what ends up happening is you get a bunch of teenagers with dog-eared copies of Nietzsche in their backpacks, completely misunderstanding every page of it.
Yeah, and I think that is also a theme that runs through the book, is there's a lot of things about having an incomplete or, in some cases, totally wrong understanding of what interpersonal relationships
are. For example, the one
are.
Story, I don't remember the title right now, but I mentioned Graham Parker, who's a musician who I'd never heard of before. You mentioned him in the story about falling in love with this one album and using it to inform your relationship with a girl, and then realizing after the fact that, oh, wait, I think I kind of misunderstood this.
Yeah. I'm sad to say that's completely 100% true.
Well, I went and I got these albums. I've been listening to it pretty steadily this weekend, so thank you for that.
Now, another thing I've noticed, not that you ever use the term in the book, but reading this, I'm like, oh, this is a lot of collections of, like, you've known a lot of manic pixie dream girls.
Wow, I love that.
You know that phrase, right?
I don't know that phrase, but now I want to start a band called Manic Pixie Dream Girls.
It's a lot like these impossibly quirky girls. You see them a lot in movies, like Zooey Deschanel plays a lot of them.
The quintessential one, the term was coined by Nathan Rabin, the, mm-hmm. I don't know, the cultural critic, to refer specifically to Kirsten Dunst's character in Elizabethtown.
Right.
This manic woman who exists solely to save the moody, introspective, needy male lead of the film, and has no personality in existence outside of how she can serve to, you know, bring the male to enlightenment through pop culture and her own twee existence.
The irony of that is that we watch movies like that and we think, she has no personality. Why would he ever fall for someone like that?
Yeah.
And yet all of us males know one, or in my case, a lot of women
well,
like that.
Well, just all through this book is Manic Pixie Dream Girls.
The and the thing about that, and I know what you're saying about the no personality, but my favorite Manic Pixie Dream Girls in movies, like whether it be Zooey Deschanel in 500 Days of Summer or Kate Winslet in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, are the ones that are simultaneously amazing and a fucking nightmare.
Right.
And a lot of them, particularly in Trapped in a World of Imaginary Grace, the girl in that, she to me was the quintessential one of those, because she was even, like, she had this whole unbelievable backstory, but it was unbelievable, so it wasn't really true, and
right.
You don't know, but you want to believe it because you want to love someone like this.
You really do. When you're that age, when you're young, you just... And now I feel really old saying this, but when you're young, you just really want to find someone that you can totally fall 1,000% in love with and just have her ruin your life.
When you get older, you just settle for the 3%.
Yeah. 3.5 on a good day.
Oh, I don't want to throttle you constantly, so I guess that's good enough.
Another essay.
I'm really on a roll tonight.
Another essay I loved was My Wild Suburban Punk Adventure.
This was fantastic.
Which kind of fits in both what we're saying about music and also women and also...
In this story, a group of kids take it upon themselves. They decide they want to be punks. They've read about punk culture, so they make the clothing. They tear their jeans. They get the safety pins, but they are living in a small town in the 80s. 70s or 80s.
Well, maybe Alex should tell us, since
well,
he wrote
late,
it.
Late 70s.
Late 70s.
They're living in a small town, and they have read about punk, and they've read about punk culture, and they know the names of all of these bands, but they have never actually heard any punk music. Because at the time, punk music was a very underground thing, and you couldn't really hear it on the radio.
There was no Spotify.
Right, and if you weren't in, you know, New York or Chicago or L.A., you couldn't really go out and see a punk band. So they just decided that they were going to become punks, but they were over-educated, over-intellectual people, and so they went on this expedition. They gave themselves punk names, and then they went on this expedition to the one... record store in another state where they thought that they could get this punk music.
And they buy the music, and they come home, and they come to a realization. And you'll have to read it to find out.
But it's the kind of perfect thing that I feel like, because I feel like we've all, to a point, have done something like that, especially when we're young. We want to, like, oh, well, this is seen, and we need to be part of it. And I think there's even early in that story, the girl says something like, oh, we gotta get on this now.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's the idea.
Right.
We gotta do this right now, because we can't let the punk scene
well, you gotta be a
by.
Hipster before, you know, and it just, what I love is that it shows that a lot of these pop cultural trends and these things that we see today that we point out, like I said, like hipsters or whatever it is, it's just another version of the same thing, and it just keeps happening. But it's also a uniquely 20th century phenomenon. I don't know that it existed quite in this way.
Well, and I think
when
you're a teenager or when you're in your early 20s, you haven't seen enough of this stuff go by that when the new thing comes around, you think, oh my God, this is the most wonderful thing, and I need to jump on this immediately.
Yeah.
As you get older, like us in our 30s, as you get a little bit older and you see these things come around again and again.
Meads in its 30s.
Yeah, exactly. You start to realize, oh, well, you know, maybe I don't need to jump on everything that comes around. I can look and see if it's actually something I'm interested in.
Now, the title, which I love, and I have to say it again, and whenever I say it, I have to say it in this, like... In
sinister.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect your dreams to die. I can't say it any other way. It's the title of an essay in the book, but what made you choose that one to be the title of the book?
I had a very hard time coming up with a title for the book, and then I thought, well, maybe I should name it after one of the essays, and that seemed to be the most memorable title.
It's a very funny title. You remember that one.
You could have changed the title of any of the essays.
I understand it. It's always tough to come up with titles. That's why our title of this podcast is called Will Sean Podcast.
Which we still think is clever, even 72 episodes in. Although I'm sure
it's
others...
It's existential, and that's why I think everybody likes it.
Yes.
So now, we got this book. It's terrific. Where can the people get it?
The people can get it in a couple of places. They can go to my website, which is Alex M. Stein, M as in Michael, STEIN.com. Or by the time this podcast is up, they can go to Amazon.com and get either a print edition or get it electronically for the Kindle.
That's terrific. And if you are a good listener of the podcast, you have already purchased a copy of this book. But to be honest with you, we were excited to have you come back to talk about it. Honestly, I couldn't think of a better guest to come back on the show, except maybe Siri the porn star. But...
I get that a lot. I walk down the street and people say, I like you. Almost as much as Siri the porn star.
But honestly, as I delved into this book, I was even more and more excited to have you back. Honestly, go to alexmstein.com, pick up the book.
The essays aren't that long. They're fantastic. They're good, quick reads.
Manic Pixie Dream Girls and music.
And Misguided Punks and Kierkegaard and Wittgenstein. It's all in there.
Yeah.
All your favorite philosophers.
There's 36 essays. The foreword was written by Dylan Brody, who is an upcoming guest on the show, and he would want me to tell you to check out his website at dylanbrody.com.
He'll get his chance.
Since I'm plug boy tonight, I will say that.
And real fast, before we jump into the topics... Quickly, mm-hmm. Mush.
Yes.
And this year's Iditarod. Did it live up to expectations? Was it a good Iditarod? What do the people need to know?
Well, first things first, Mush the movie had its TV premiere on PBS in Alaska during the Iditarod this year. It can be bought at mushthemovie.com.
Okay.
This year's Iditarod was really, really exciting. It was extremely warm for Alaska. So usually you'll have temperatures ranging from about 20 above zero to about 60 below.
Okay.
This year, there were times where it was above freezing. There was like 40 degrees above zero.
So they were basically on grass and they were having to slap wheels onto the sleds.
For a lot of it. And there was a lot of what they call overflow and river melt, and where they would have to, unhook the dogs and take them across streams. And
it's like the Oregon Trail. Do you want to ford the river or pay the ferryman?
Yeah. Exactly. It was a very exciting Iditarod. Ali Zirkel came very, very close to winning. It's been, I think, about 25 years since a woman has won the Iditarod. She is definitely someone who I think will win the Iditarod in the next 4 or 5 years. She did everything completely right, but just wasn't able to pull it out.
And sometimes it's just the luck element.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there were some great stories during this year's Iditarod. There was a dog that got loose and escaped from one of the teams, and the musher had to withdraw because you can't go on if you have a missing dog. And the dog actually turned around, followed the trail back to its kennel 400 miles.
Wow.
And there's
it's the worst Disney movie ever.
Yeah. there is my friend Cindy Abbott, who is one of my favorite mushers, who is a woman who has summited Mount Everest. And she was training with Lance Mackey's team, and Lance Mackey's won the Iditarod 4 times. And she has a very rare degenerative eye disease. And she had a fantastic, fantastic Iditarod. But unfortunately, 20 or 25 miles into it, hit a tree and broke her pelvis. Ooh. And then went another 600 miles before she realized maybe
blind
it's time
people
to stop.
And the Iditarod, not a good combination.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right.
That's crazy. And if you want to hear more about that documentary, go find the episode. Any new listeners, go find Alex's old episode from the podcast where he talks all about Mush. It's a great episode. I'm talking to you, Sam, down in Texas, who's a big fan of
that. That's right, Sam. What's going on?
Sam, I'm sure you're going to eventually want to listen to all of the episodes, all of the back episodes.
I don't advise
start
it.
Start with that one.
Start with Alex's. Any new listeners, Well, I want to start briefly, just jump into this. James Gandolfini died. He died the day after we recorded the last episode. I know we're a little late on this, but considering last summer on the podcast I kept you up to date on my Sopranos rewatch, I feel like we have to bring up the fact he died.
So no reunion movie.
No. There was never going to be any more Tony Soprano anyway, but...
I have a theory, by the way, about James Gandolfini and you, Will Link.
Lay it on me.
I think that somehow you believe that you are, in certain ways, James Gandolfini. Maybe crossed with
Gandolfini
someone else.
Or Tony Soprano?
Tony Soprano.
I was about to say Tony Soprano.
I have this image in the back of my mind that... if you and Sean had a sitcom, which, by the way, you really should. So if you and Sean had a sitcom, you'd be the guy who'd be, you know, tromping through everywhere, leaving wreckage in your wake, and you know, telling people off left and right. And then Sean would be the guy with the big bankroll who'd come over and say, I'm sorry, he does this every week. And you'd peel off some money and say, here, go buy yourself something.
Go get something nice.
I'll be honest with you. There are times on this podcast where I clearly channel Tony Soprano, particularly during the Enemy portions. And I'll tell you what, last year, rewatching all the Sopranos, I was getting angry. I was having anxiety. I was getting...
College, a friend of mine, Pete, who, that's when the Sopranos was still on the air, he was catching up. He goes, yeah, so spent all day watching Sopranos. He goes, after about three episodes, start talking kind of funny.
Well, you know, I would be quicker to be like yell about something when watching. Just like after I watch Mad Men, I'm quicker to drink. I mean, these shows have...
you watch Breaking Bad, you're quicker to...
These shows have an effect on me. But you know what's funny? Gandolfini, I mean, that could be the great... I mean, you could argue it's the greatest... television actor performance of all time.
I wouldn't know. I haven't seen the show.
You can make that argument. But without James Gandolfini's Tony Soprano, we have no Walter White. We have no Don Draper. We don't have any of these other characters. He was the first kind of real anti-hero character in this new kind of... this new generation of television.
No Vince Mackey. And also, he was the first character where you can watch and go, well, this guy does a lot of despicable shit, but there's a soul there and there's a humanity, and we can still... care about what happens to this character and become emotionally invested in him. You know, up until that point, television was always, you gotta make the main character likable. Not really.
And, yeah, and I mean, he was pretty
51,
amazing.
He was 51, he died of a heart attack in Sicily.
The thing
very
that
sad.
Amazes me, that he was only 51. He was only 37 when he started The Sopranos, which blows my mind. The Mead is older than him. I mean, it's not,
and,
but it is.
I just want to say
in
that
mead years.
Next time someone dies, can you please tell me to get off Twitter? Because I got myself in a little bit of trouble. I don't know why I can't. When someone high-profile dies, I can't help myself but just make a number of gallows humors, terrible jokes. And I got myself blocked by Matt Zoller Seitz, who took over RogerEbert.com. He's a film critic I very much respect, and now I can no longer follow him on Twitter because I made a stupid-ass comment.
Do you want to tell us what it
no,
is?
No, because I deleted it
no,
for a
I'm
reason.
No, I'm dying to know.
Tell you
see,
later.
You shouldn't have said anything. Everyone wants to know. Now, you're on the podcast. It's a safe space. You have to do it now.
So, it's a safe space? What is this, like therapy with yes. Lorraine Bracco? He made some comment about James Gandolfini was a man with a good heart. I wrote back, well, I wouldn't say he had a good heart.
Wait, so you
well,
wrote...
see, that's funny, though.
It's funny, but you wrote it at him?
Yeah.
Well, that was stupid.
Well, where else am I going to write it? I had to respond to his comment. I couldn't just put that... just in the void, apropos of nothing.
He's not me. You can't just respond to him like that.
Turns out he had a very, Matt Zoller cites his wife died suddenly years ago, and he had a very close connection with James Gandolfini, and he sent him flowers when his wife passed away, so he was personally offended. Sorry, Matt.
No, I don't think you have to worry about him listening to the podcast.
So, but I made a number of really jokes in poor taste. I apologize.
Next time, text me them instead.
Like I did with the Boston Marathon?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
He's the worst.
Now I want to hear all the Boston Marathon
tell you
jokes.
Later.
Okay.
Well, let's quickly move on.
Yes.
Right. To, there's a new film coming out this weekend, The Heat. Melissa McCarthy, Sandra
it's
Bullock.
About women going through menopause.
Exactly. Okay. you know, it's a buddy cop movie. Paul
See, Fee. Sandra Bullock, she plays by the rules. But Melissa McCarthy, she's a loose cannon. And the chief, he'll have none of it.
I mean, look, it looks fairly generic, but I think...
You better take away their badge and their gun.
I think that they're both such terrific performers.
Right, and they're likable.
But here's the thing. We didn't talk about this last time it came up. And when Melissa McCarthy's last film came out, Rex Reed, rather than make really a critique of her performance...
That was the movie with Jason Bateman?
Yeah, Identity Thief. He just called her like a hippo. Because, right. You know, because he's a great critic who, you know, clever guy, Rex Reed. And there was a big double, like, it's, and it is a double standard, because, I mean, he wasn't calling Chris Farley back in the day, or Kevin James, or Zach Galifianakis, big guys, with big guts, hippos.
Like James Gandolfini?
Yeah, like James Gandolfini. And Rex Reed had an opportunity to apologize this week, and instead, he just shit on her again. He compared...
Did he double down?
He kind of doubled down on his statement.
Well, what I'm thinking is, it's 2013. Why is anyone paying any attention to Rex Reed or anything that he says? And I wonder, is this just Rex Reed thinking to himself, nobody's reading me anymore, no one's paying attention, I got to generate some controversy?
That could be true.
It has to be. I mean, I'm under the impression many of our listeners probably don't even know who Rex Reed is.
He's from the Fantastic Four, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, there's a couple of things. Yeah, Melissa McCarthy is someone who's very, very big. She lost a lot of weight in one of the last seasons of the Gilmore Girls and was like, shockingly thin. And then gained all that weight back. So,
because fat is funny.
And, you know, you can say, well, that's probably not healthy, and especially after James Gandolfini died, you can say that's probably not healthy, and it's probably not. But on the other hand, you know, so what?
Yeah.
She's funny. She's good. She's a good actress.
She's a great actress, and I've heard some people criticize her for, you know, taking roles where she plays up on being sort of the gross fat girl, and it's like, well, that may or may not be true, but there just aren't a lot of roles for women.
What? How different is it than someone like John Hamm taking roles where he plays the dashing handsome man? I mean, it's genetics, and you... Granted, there are more... I don't even know. Are there more dashing handsome men? But you know what I mean.
Well, you know what the whole thing with that is? I've never found... I wasn't like a Chris Farley fan. I never found the joke of the fat guy falls down funny. But I feel like with Melissa McCarthy, at least with the Bridesmaids, and we'll see in some of these other films as they come out, then, I mean... There was more of a character she was creating. Mm-hmm. There was more to that bridesmaid's character than just that she was big. I mean, she was a weirdo, and she played up a lot of those. But she also, there's that really emotional scene she has with
Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig, where she kind of tells her to get off her ass.
But that's the writing as well.
But she sells it.
Yeah.
Sells it.
Well, she's a really, really great actress. And a really great comic actress. And I think that's something that people tend to maybe lose track of when they're just criticizing her. But again, Rex Reed.
The other thing I don't understand is the posters in the UK decided they were going to Photoshop and slim down Melissa McCarthy's face. Now, this doesn't make any sense to me, because aren't they also kind of selling the movie on, like, she's the bigger one, she's the more rough one, so we're going to... And we all know who she is, so what are you doing? Why are they doing that? Why do you think they do that?
I think because they're desperate for us not to bring up Bangers and Mash.
Which is actually what their version of the Heat is called.
Right, exactly.
She's Bangers, and the other one's Mash.
Sandra Bullock is Mash.
That's got to be what the Rizzolian Isles of England is, that show, right?
I think the TNT only greenlight shows that have an ampersand in the title, Rizzolian Isles, Franklin and Bash. I got a new one like Dog and Pony, I don't know what
it's
called.
Oh, no, they got one with like Rebecca Romijn and some guy who... Not John Stamos, but kind of looks like him.
Yeah, another ampersand show.
Yeah.
TNT knows ampersands. It's T and T. Boom. Nailed it.
Sean, are you going to go see The Heat?
I might. I mean, we also have this weekend White House Down coming out.
Yes.
Which was worked on by our friend Zach Fox.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to see that ahead of The Heat. I'm going to wait to see what the reviews are, because as you can tell, I've been very ambivalent about this movie. If it's just a blah... By the numbers, comedy, I may wait till DVD.
Alex, for you, is The Heat on?
The heat is on, although the question is this really a movie you pay to go see, or is this a movie you sneak into the theater after you see the movie that you paid to see?
Maybe I'll pay for White House Down, since my friend did work on it, and then sneak into The Heat.
Not that we're recommending that people do that, because that's technically theft. But if you're going to do it.
This
with
is
the
all
heat.
Theory. We're just talking, in the abstract.
Hypothetically.
Yes.
I,
in a vacuum, this is what I would do.
Up until 2 years ago, I had never snuck into a movie. And now I find myself doing it more and more.
Because they jacked the prices up $1.50?
Probably. Probably.
You know what I feel?
Here's the test.
I've spent so much money on films over my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Here's the test. Do you bring your own 3D glasses so that you can sneak into a 3D movie and not have to pay for the glasses?
No, because I don't particularly like 3D.
I do have my own 3D glasses.
Okay. Because that's sort of the test.
I kept a pair.
I got to get the prescription 3D glasses.
Okay, $800 later.
Yeah, well, if things keep going
good
the way
for nothing
they
with Avatar 2.
I think they'll
2.
Have Google 3D glasses in about a month.
That's true.
F that. I want contact lenses. I want implants.
Google implants.
Yeah.
I want to bring this up.
Of course you do.
Katy Perry. She used to be married to Russell Brand.
She kissed a girl. She liked it.
And she kissed Russell Brand and apparently liked it as well.
Did she kiss Jill Soviel?
I always think that, too.
Who?
Because I think of that. There's another...
Jill Soviel is a singer-songwriter, and she also did a song, a totally different song called I Kissed a Girl.
Oh.
Yeah, earlier, I kissed a girl.
Okay. Did she like
as
it?
As opposed to, I kissed a girl.
Right.
Yeah, I believe... they both seem to like it. So, when they divorced, apparently Russell Brand decided to... tell her he wanted a divorce by sending a text message to her and never spoke to her again, which I always figure the text message is a bad way to break up with someone, but it's got to be an even worse way to end a marriage.
Is it legally binding?
I don't know. Well, they're divorced.
I think it depends on whether it's just plain text or if he also, like, attached a photo.
Smiley face.
Yeah, or smiley face. Exactly.
Now... it got me thinking about maybe some of the bad breakups or pussy ways we may have ended things. I know recently I dated a girl, and I am a firm believer you have to do these things in person when you want to end things.
What about the phone?
I still am a firm believer that in person, depending on how long you've been seeing them, is the way to go. And this is a girl that I had seen for a few months, and I'm like, well, I'm going to do this in person. Problem is, every time I get in front of her, we would just have sex. So I couldn't break up with her ever because I'm a weak man. And she knew I think she knew I was going to end things. So she showed up in, like, this skirt and one of those shirts with, like, the zipper. And I'm like, and I was, and the second she showed up, I'm like, I'm fucked.
So we were.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally. So 2 weeks later, I did break up with her, and I did it over the phone. And she was not happy that I was doing this over the phone. My argument being... you would have tricked me into not breaking up with you by sleeping with me.
So she didn't trick you into having phone sex first?
No.
Because then you wouldn't
it's
have been able
same,
to do
though.
It.
It's not the same,
though. It's never the same.
No.
But I gotta admit, I feel a little bad about that because I had a girl break up with me just by... we had dated for months, and she just decided one day to stop talking to me.
That's effective.
Oh, man. Well, it wasn't.
Well, you know what? I think the best way to break up with a girlfriend is via telegram. I don't think this is working. Stop. We must stop seeing each other. Stop. Please stop calling me. Stop.
I don't know. I'm old school. I like the carrier pigeon.
Well, you know what? In this day and age, if you write a letter to someone and mail it to them, I think they will believe you to be deranged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people say, oh, something great about getting a letter. If I got a letter in the mail from someone, I would worry for their sanity.
That's something a manic pixie dream girl would do. She would
send
me a letter.
A scented letter with stickers.
I'd be all
for
this. Oh,
God, don't get me started on stickers.
If you want our home addresses, please email us at willshawnpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be more than happy to provide it.
Alex,
women only.
No rainbow stickers.
Alex,
please,
in,
God.
In your essay for Suzanne's, you had a great breakup moment in that involving orgasms.
Yes.
Do you know, do you want to give away the line or... because it's pretty good.
Well, this was... how do I say this in a way that doesn't make me sound bad? Oh, it's impossible. So this was actually the first woman that I had sex with, and I didn't really know what I was doing, and she kind of just would lay there like a dead fish.
That's how you do it, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. When she broke up with me, she said, well, I never had... an orgasm with you, and I couldn't think of anything else to say, so I just said the first thing that came into my mind, which is, well, I never had an orgasm with you either. And she was so stunned and shocked by this. And then she started like going through her mental Rolodex of all of our time together, trying to figure out if this could actually have been possible. And I recognized right then that there was no better exit line that I would ever hear in my entire life. So I just turned around and walked away and never spoke to her again.
I think that's a great line. I think you did.
Unless you have had an orgasm with them and they know you have.
Well, obviously they know.
Because with men, there's ocular proof. With women, it's a little hazy sometimes.
I wonder if
wait,
you...
Wait, in her eye? I'm confused.
No. It's from Othello.
I hate to say this, Sean, but you may have missed the point of that anecdote.
I might have.
So, Sean, nothing from you? Nothing that you're
no,
willing
I'm
to
usually
share?
Pretty good. I mean, it's either been on the phone or in person, or things just kind of organically fade away.
Okay.
That's happened,
when,
too.
When things organically fade away, do you feel like you need to clarify and you need
it's
to make sure?
Not always. Sometimes it's pretty clear. I don't necessarily need to. We need to have the definitive break.
You only need to clarify if you're the one who doesn't want it to end.
Exactly. Right. But when you're both kind of, this isn't working, okay. But no, I've never had any real traumatic. I mean, I've been broken up with and I've broken up with people, but it's never been, there's never been a story.
I couldn't imagine getting, like, saying I want a divorce in a text message,
nah.
though. But there'll be people that will do this.
What
but,
about you just tweet
I'm
at them?
I'm thinking, though, maybe the point of that is that how crazy do you have to be too crazy for Russell Brand?
Well...
Or maybe she was too normal, and he's the crazy one.
Oh, that could be.
That might be it. I don't... For some reason, I don't want to give her... I don't know why I don't want to give her any credit.
Because she has boobs.
I mean... she's... I mean, I got nothing against her. She's a firework.
She is.
Well, speaking of fireworks, you know where they were setting off fireworks?
Where?
Last week? In Miami. You know why? Because the Miami...
Because of Melissa McCarthy.
Because of Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock.
Cuban Independence Day?
Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock won the NBA championship.
Good for them.
The Heat. The Heat won. And anyway, when we finished the last podcast, Game 6 was going on.
Right.
Miami and San Antonio. And San Antonio looked like they had this game. Looked like they were about to be the NBA champions. And Sean and I quickly, along with last week's guest, Stephen Brandon, who probably didn't know what was going on, we turned on the game because we wanted to see the last minutes
of it. It wasn't Australian rules basketball.
So he didn't understand. So we were watching.
He said, why aren't there any wallabies on the court?
Yeah, wallabies play basketball in,
and
down under.
Box.
So we turn on the game, and we watch Miami make this great comeback.
It was a good
game. They send it to overtime. Fantastic game all around. Especially, you know, like, I didn't really have any rooting interest either way, so it was just great basketball game. Well, you want to know who didn't think it was great to see a basketball game? The fans of the Miami Heat. Because apparently, when they thought the season was over and the game was done, they started to leave. Now, granted, there were like 5 minutes left in this game. And this is game six of the championship.
Those tickets probably cost a minimum $400 for the cheap seats.
They started to leave the stadium. And guess what happened? As they're leaving and they hear on the overheads and they get in their cars, they start to find out Miami is making a comeback. So these assholes decide they want to try to get back into the stadium. But guess what? It's too late. It's too late, Miami sports fans. That's why you have to support the team. It's sports. Don't you know anything can happen? Haven't you seen teams come back before? I mean, you have no... there's lots of examples of this throughout human history. And that is why you, Miami sports fans, are the enemy of the podcast. Go fuck yourselves. You shouldn't leave the game early. Look, I'm a big-time Yankee fan, and I have sat through some awful fucking Yankee games because I support the team. These people who leave the games early, they're not real fans. They go, fuck them. Oh, I got work in the morning. Then you shouldn't have came to the game. God, fuck you. You wouldn't be saying that if you got to support the team.
What I love about some of these fans is that they were in the parking lot giving interviews to the news. It's saying, well, you know, it was a good season. It wasn't our year. We fought hard. Maybe next year. And the game was still going on. And Miami was making this comeback. And these are just terrible fans. And I think the Miami Heat in general, I think why people don't like the team is because they sense this. They sense that there's this artificial quality to the fans, to the team, to Miami. No one's really invested. It's not like a, like you said, like the Yankees or a Mets. Like if you're a Mets fan, like that's
well,
hard.
If you're a Mets fan, you'd expect this, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say this. New York fans, I hate to say it, but Boston fans, Philadelphia fans.
Chicago fans, yeah.
Fans of the cold weather cities. Mm-hmm. They're the real story. They don't leave.
Got nowhere else to be.
You know, the amazing thing about this story is that it didn't happen in Los Angeles. Because that's like the stereotype of the Los Angeles fans.
But I feel like Lakers fans are Lakers fans. I feel like they would have stuck around. I really do. As a Laker fan, I would have sat to the end.
So Laker fans maybe, but like Dodger fans, they'd be out of there in the sixth inning.
Dodger fans show up in the second inning, they leave at seven.
Because traffic is so bad where Dodger Stadium is. You sit in an hour and a half of traffic.
Traffic is bad at every sports
but
arena.
But Dodger Stadium is exceptionally bad because if someone had found a place to, like, put an ambush, they couldn't have found a better place in Chavez Ravine. There's, like, one way in, one way out. It's known for just being awful to get in and out of.
Sean, I have been in much worse traffic jams at Yankee Stadium than I have at Dodger Stadium. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. There's no excuse. This is terrible. This is shitty fucking fans. That's no excuse. Traffic is no excuse if you're a sports fan.
Yeah, let's get back to hating Miami. Forget all of this.
I think there's some people in East LA that don't want to argue with you whether or not they're true Dodger fans.
Well, look, I'll go down there and I'll have some words with them.
Okay, you go.
I'm going to go down there.
Go take you to Norwalk. Has
UCLA been the enemy of the podcast yet?
No.
Oh.
Fuck them.
Maybe they
Berkeley's,
will.
I don't even know what a Bruin is. It's like the illegitimate offspring of a bear.
Yeah. It's like a bear that puts on airs.
You know what was a Bruin? From Winnie the Pooh. I think that's a Bruin. A bear that puts on airs.
I know you're an Iditarod fan.
Yes.
But, I mean, are you a sports fan?
Yeah. You know, I'm a fan of certain sports. I actually like basketball a lot. When I was a kid, I liked football and baseball, and now I kind of can't watch them. They're both the most boring things in the world.
See, I love baseball. I'm a big baseball fan.
I love with these sports, if you were to condense all the action in a football game or a baseball game, the whole thing runs about 13 minutes.
Right. Yeah. I went to Dodger Stadium for the first time about a year ago, and I've lived out here for a while, and I was amazed, and I don't know exactly when this happened, but sometime between then and the last time I was at a ball game, which I think was 20 years earlier, they started doing all of, like, the ball game isn't enough anymore. So they have, you know, the little dancing presidents at National Stadium, or they have, you know, like the races around the outfield and all of this shit.
I don't buy into any of this crap either. And I never did, like, a Yankee Stadium. Like, Yankee fans don't do the wave.
Do they do the kiss cam?
No, they don't do the kiss cam either. Yankee Stadium's a
pure
classic.
Baseball built in a stadium built to replicate the historic Yankee Stadium.
They have a couple of, like, they have the on-screen trivia stuff in between innings.
You got to keep the people engaged.
But, I mean, they're not, like, you know, it's not like they're breaking out anything crazy. Like I said, they don't have people running around
with t-shirt guns.
Yeah, no, they don't have t-shirt guns either. That's because Yankees are fucking classy organization.
Also, when you criminalize t-shirts, only criminals will have t-shirt guns.
You shouldn't tax the guns, tax the t-shirts.
Exactly.
Before we go, I always like to end with a weird story.
This one's a good one.
And a jury found a urologist not guilty of causing one Daniel Metzger of having an 8-month erection. Apparently, this man needed a penile implant to help his impotence, as you do.
Why else would you need a penile implant?
And as a result, he had an 8-month erection, and this caused embarrassment. He became withdrawn. He had to wear baggy clothing. He couldn't ride his motorcycle or bend over to pick up the newspaper. But they found the doctor who gave him the penile implant not guilty because they said with all surgery comes a level of risk. And I guess this is elective surgery. Penile implants. Alex, your thoughts?
You know, I can't help but wonder if there are, like, a lot of women who started following him around and going, oh, come on, I'll take care of that for you.
He can only hope.
Because if he'd been getting a lot of sex, I think he would have been cool with it.
Mm-hmm. I think he was married.
Oh.
And,
okay.
And that, I'm sorry. That would be exhausting. Even if every woman's like, I could get that down. No, it'll still be exhausting to walk around with an erection for 8 months. You can't ride your motorcycle.
Have you seen?
I wonder what finally got it to go down. You know, what horrific thought did he have at the 8 month mark?
I think he had
to
have.
Well, Showa just got released on Criterion, so.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I think he had to have another surgery. I think he had to have some other.
Now, do they do with these implants? It's not like you just have a boner. I think they actually put something in there. There's a rod, or there's. There's some sort of implant, I believe. I mean, that's why it's called a penile implant.
Why did he wait 8 months to deal with this?
They say after 4 hours, you got to call your doctor.
Right.
Now, let me ask you this. Would this have been... Because apparently he didn't have... he lost his health insurance at some point in that 8 months.
Because he's got fired for sexually harassing his coworkers with his erect member.
Yeah. And now it's a pre-existing condition. So until Obamacare fully kicks in...
Well, I was about to say, would this be covered under Obamacare?
Starting in October.
Penile implant... Everybody, starting in October, go get your penile implants on the president.
Well, it's no different than getting breast implants removed, I would imagine.
Mm.
Would that be covered?
I don't think so.
Somehow I feel like it's very different. And maybe I just say that because I'm a man, and I shudder any surgery that has to go to my penis.
Well, I think with breast implants, you only get that covered if you like have breast cancer and have to have them removed.
Or if you have back problems and if they're too big and you're having chronic issues. I know someone that had that.
So if you have... Dick cancer, I guess.
So that's what he's got to hope for. To get to. Let me tell you what.
This is taking a dark turn.
Impotence is it's a serious problem. I mean, no one on this podcast has ever suffered from this.
Of course not.
Never.
But, you know. Well, I don't know. This guy and his erection. I feel bad for Daniel. And his 8 month erection. And his impotence. And his... family that has to...
And you've got no job, no insurance, and his dick won't go down. Well, poor son of a bitch.
I'd like to thank Nathan Frank, listener of the podcast, who addressed, just sending me this story.
And yes, and if you too have any weird stories you come across that you would like for us to bring up on the podcast, feel free to message us and send it on.
Yeah. Well,
do our work for us.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, this is exhausting. This is as exhausting as an eight-month erection.
I think we should wrap this eight-month erection up.
This podcast is the equivalent of an eight-month
if
erection.
If the podcast lasts more than 4 hours, please consult the doctor.
So this is the eight-month erection of podcasts.
Yes.
Excellent.
Just so you know.
You know, I have a really short legal thing. Can I bring it up?
Yeah,
bring it up.
So the guy whose name I won't speak who killed Trayvon Martin.
Voldemort?
Yeah, okay. went on trial this week. And his defense attorney opened his trial with a knock-knock joke.
Yes.
Opened his trial with a knock-knock joke. Nobody on the jury laughed. And then he berated the jury for not laughing at his knock-knock joke, which wasn't funny.
Now, having been a person that's done essay shows and has performed comedy live, that's a good way to go, right? Berate the audience for not laughing at your...
Yes.
Humor.
Yes. Whenever you get in trouble, just berate the audience.
Because it's not you. It's clearly they're too stupid.
Right. And that's what you want to be telling
thinking?
The jury.
Because this is a nationally televised trial. What's going on?
He's going to be performing at the Improv next week.
Hey, yo, tough crowd.
The only thing I can think of is that this was some deliberate thing to set him up for, you know, saying on appeal that he didn't
stand your ground law?
Well, saying on appeal that he didn't have adequate defense.
Oh, that's smart. You turn the jury against you and then blame a hostile jury.
I mean, yeah, I saw that, and I was... I saw you write a tweet about it, and I didn't quite understand what the tweet was first, and then I turned on the news, and I saw what it was referring to, and yeah, I mean, it wasn't even a good joke. I mean, should we really be making jokes at the start of the trial of a kid is dead?
Right, a kid is dead, and
Hey, he shouldn't have had a hoodie.
Right, and one of the major issues in this trial is, well, you know, he was threatening, and he's a black kid, and he's wearing a hoodie, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, if you want to really respect the life of the dead kid, start off with a knock-knock joke.
Yeah. I got to just say this about this trial now, too, because I really don't understand this trial. I don't understand how this is even a question. And I know I haven't seen all the evidence, but, okay... This kid's walking through his neighborhood. He calls the police. The police say, Don't go out there. He goes out there with a gun. Someone ends up dead. If anyone was standing their ground, wasn't it Trayvon Martin? This is all I'm saying. Obviously, people would be alive and people wouldn't be possibly going to jail if this guy had just, you know, they say...
Well, Will, they always think they can get away with it.
You know, they say... what's this thing in New York? See something, say something. None. See something and go towards it with a gun.
See something, shoot someone.
Yeah, exactly.
What he thinks the law is.
So, you know, fuck you, George Zimmerman.
Give him the chair.
No, well, no, because I'm anti-death penalty.
Fine. All right, well, that little twisted bit of legal logic...
Alex, thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Thank you, guys. It's always great. I'm a regular listener to the podcast. I really enjoy the podcast a lot, and it was a pleasure to come back here and hang out with you guys and plug stuff.
Tell us one more time where people can find your book.
It's alexmstein.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/NoMrBond, or just search No Mr. Bond. It'll be on Amazon.com by the time this is up, and mushthemovie.com for all things Iditarod.
And I'm serious. You go out and get this book. You'll really enjoy it. Yeah. Like Sean was saying, it's a bunch of essays, so there's something for everyone in this book. I think people are really going to like it. We really enjoyed it, and we're not just saying that because you're a guest on the show.
We'll see what you say next week.
Oh, that guy last week kept saying the word like.
Exactly.
You can follow me on Twitter at TheSeanDavid. You can also download and buy and read my book on Amazon, Triumvirs, TRIUMVIRS, Amazon Kindle. And yeah, all the usual stuff. Like me on Facebook, and I have nothing coming up right now, so that's it.
You can follow me at TheRealWillLink. And, oh, you know, before I forget, give your Twitter handle, because, Alex, you are very funny on Twitter.
Thank you very much. I am Coldfoot Films on Twitter, so at Coldfoot Films.
Follow this man, and then follow me at The Real Will Link. You can also listen to me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti at crntalk.com. I review movies like Monsters University.
Is that the one with the zombies?
That's the one with the zombies. And World War Z.
That's the one with the Brad Pitt.
That's the one I was hoping you would say that's the one with the monsters, but
we'll fix it in post.
Yeah. You can also read reviews of mine at u1can.com, can like the city in France. And I will be reading another essay at Tattletales on July 24th.
I got a hair appointment.
That's at the Shetty's Public Parlor.
That's a Wednesday night, not a normal...
It's a Wednesday night. They've moved it. They're moving to Wednesdays, people. And this essay is about how I will never find love, but I will manage to find sex.
Excellent.
And so, you know, we'll see how that goes for me and the rest of my life. On the show next week, funny man, Zach Bassetta. Bassetta.
I don't know.
Bassetta.
Bassetta.
Good, now we got three interpretations.
Well,
let's call him Zach.
Zach B.
Zach is coming on. He's a funny guy. I've seen him perform stories and stuff, storytelling things. He's a good guy. He's going to be on. And then, God, what's his fucking last names? The week after that, Jackson Trouks?
Truax. Yeah, like the Lorax.
The Truax.
Jackson Truax.
He speaks for the... Nah, I was going to say
he speaks
for the Heebs,
the Blades.
But that wouldn't work.
Well, we're going to have Zach next week. We're going to have Jackson the week after. Jackson is a terrific writer. He writes a lot of criticism, and he also hosts The Creative Fet, which is the show, which is a really low-key, little open mic thing. If you've got scenes from a play you want to try out, you've got, if you're a musician, got a song you want to try out.
Short film, anything.
Anything, you can come down and try it out there. It's a cool little environment. So we're going to hear all about that. And then the week after that, as we mentioned earlier, he wrote the foreword to No, Mr. Bond, I Expect Your Dreams to Die. Dylan Brody will be on the show after that. And I wanted to say his name again because I knew how to pronounce it.
Isn't it Brody?
It's Dylan Brody. Dylan Brody will be on the show.
And that will be a great episode. They're all great. That one's going to be it's going to be an episode.
It's going to be something.
It's going to be something.
Alex, one more time, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you for the mead.
Seriously, this has gone right to my head. And for the Will Sean podcast, I'm Sean David.
I'm Will Link.
And we're finished.
We're finished.